Here we go.
21 gigawatts!
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
I fight for the users.
The CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Welcome, everybody, to Tech to You Tuesdays. I am back again, still a little congested sounding for the second week in a row, so I apologize for the way my voice sounds. It usually sounds really, really pretty. Right?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. I've got Ryan with me again this week, and we've got a good amount of stuff to go over. We're going to do a recap here in a little bit about what I talked about last week with the AT&T data breach. I had Jeff with me last week. We talked about that. Had you heard about that, the data breach?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we had talked about it briefly, didn't we?
We covered it just very briefly, but I know that you and I had talked about it because it had been affecting you specifically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got a confirmation from AT&T, finally, that it did affect me directly.
Nice.
So we'll go over that in just a little bit.
Not nice.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Great.
Good news. So we'll go over that in a little bit. But I want to start off today with some electric vehicle news. I don't really cover EVs a ton. This isn't really a car show, but I feel like it falls into the category. I'm an EV driver. I'm into them. I'm into cars in general. I follow car news, and it'd be weird for me just to talk about like the new 911 Turbo S on a tech show. So I guess I can kind of get away with talking about cars as long as it's EVs. So a while back, this is in 2018. There was a Tesla Model X, which is the higher-end version of their SUVs. These are like $100,000 SUVs. A guy was killed by leaving it in autopilot, and it crashed into... it was on the freeway, and it crashed into like
it's kind of like the center median or something.
Yeah, you know, like when you have an off ramp, and then there's that divider, and there's usually like those big water buckets and stuff that slow you down if
this
you hit
was,
those.
This was one of like the first major like autopilot
deaths,
crash controversies, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it was in the news, and obviously there's already people dumping on Tesla's autopilot, and reasonably so. They hype it as this, like, your car can drive itself. It can't.
No.
It can stay in its own lane. It's pretty good about, speed control. And, if somebody in front of you slows down, it'll slow down for you. Right now, there's actually a national release of their full self-driving available for anyone who owns a Tesla. So if you have one, chances are you already have a software update that's available. If you haven't already installed it, you can use their full self-driving feature, which is like it'll navigate city streets for you. And so you can like quite literally from your driveway say, take me to work. And it'll do stop signs and red lights and hold for pedestrians and ducks crossing the road and whatever. You know, it's pretty good at pretty much all of that. I don't trust it enough to use it on my own, but it's impressive what it is capable of. So anyway, if you're driving around and Tesla drivers appear worse than usual, it's probably because they're using
those
beta.
Vision Pros on and they're sitting here going like this.
Well, yeah, that's what we do. We drive around with our Apple Vision Pro. So back in 2018, there's this Tesla Model X SUV crashed into basically like a center divide, a barrier of some kind, and the driver died. And a wrongful death suit was filed at that time or shortly thereafter against Tesla for obviously the driver having died while using autopilot. And the case was effectively, Tesla says you can just, it drives itself, it's self-driving. And they use that term, self-driving.
Right.
So the case was...
Asterisk.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And it's to be fair, as somebody who uses autopilot on a Tesla, it even back then, I mean, I wasn't driving one in 2018. I got my first one in late 2020. And even then though, when you engaged autopilot, it wasn't really like filled with warnings of any kind of like, you must do this. It does say on the screen, like, pay attention, keep your hands on the wheel. It's not a really abrupt notification, but I'm sure that there were things in the terms and conditions I signed that said that you need to pay attention. So, and I'm sure this guy did too. So, this case that came up back in 2018 of a wrongful death suit was finally settled. We don't know the amount yet, as far as I know. That has not been published, but it was going through court, as court takes forever in most cases. This was taking a very long time, and then finally Tesla has settled with the family of the guy who died. The part that kind of is crazy to me is that it was determined through an investigation with the NTSB, which is the National Transportation Safety Board, I think is what that stands for. The NTSB investigated this, and they identified that the guy was not only not paying attention to the road, he was actively playing video games on his phone. So they were able to identify that through using his getting into his iPhone and going through the logs stored on the phone to identify what he was doing at the time. So he was not paying attention at all to the road. Now, the thing that Tesla definitely did wrong was that their autopilot failed to identify a barrier in the road. And I've seen this, like, even as people sometimes with the sun sort of in your eyes or at the right angle, and there's construction going on, so the lane lines have been, like, carved off of the road. Mm-hmm. They almost still look like active lane lines. So, and then there's, like, the construction barrier. It happens with people, too. We're like, oh my God, where's my lane? And then you kind of figure it out, and you're like, okay, I'm good. And, you know, Tesla or any self-driving vehicle will struggle just as much as we do with that kind of thing. It's not any better. And it appears that in this case, it was kind of one of those situations where there was during construction on the road, and this barrier was in sort of an unusual spot. And if a person who wasn't paying attention hit it, it would be like, oh, okay, that's just another person who wasn't really paying close attention driving. But in this case, the Tesla couldn't figure it out. So one of the big questions is, would Tesla have lost this case? It's hard to say because they have on their side that this guy didn't follow the rules of autopilot, which is that you still have to pay attention to the road. So I guess that the takeaway for this is that anybody who's getting a new vehicle, whether it's a Tesla or it is a, like Ford uses Blue Cruise, everybody kind of has their own name for it. Tesla uses autopilot as their main thing.
Road.
Yeah, like, don't trust these things. I'm telling you from somebody who uses it and for the most part understands what they're doing, the computation involved in identifying what the cameras around my car can see and how it reacts to things, I don't trust it.
You know? And how many little things can interfere with that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, in fact, there's times where I'm driving home where I drive home on 80, often the sun is like right in my eyes. And sometimes it's just barely off to the left a little bit, and it blinds one of my, it's called a B-pillar camera. So like one of the cameras, it's like right by my head, basically. And it'll tell me on the screen, like the B-pillar camera on the driver's side is temporarily blinded, and autopilot will not be able to continue or whatever, it won't turn it on. So it's good that it kind of has those notifications. And I would say that overall, I have a good experience with it, but I don't trust it to just go blindly at all. So if you're looking at a new car and you're thinking like, oh yeah, I've heard really good things about autopilot or Blue Cruise or whatever vehicle you're looking at, plenty of like normal gas cars come with these features now too. I can't stress enough. They're not as good as they're advertised. They're definitely kind of sketchy.
They are overhyped lane assist and assisted braking systems.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. And Tesla's full self-driving is more, more intelligent. But even then, I don't trust those kinds of things. And I just mean, I think that they work okay under very close supervision. And that's, Tesla says it needs to be supervised. They even call it that on the full self-driving. It's full self-driving supervised, quote unquote. So another vehicle news thing I wanted to go through real quick was just kind of interesting. The EV market has been crashing recently, and a lot of it is because there was just a ton of available inventory and demand wasn't very high. So companies like Tesla were slashing prices on new vehicles, trying to get inventory out the door. The growth of EVs in the American market, though, is definitely... we know how big it is. Like everywhere you go, you see a Tesla.
For sure.
It's, especially here in California. Yeah. I don't know if it's quite the same in Reno, but I can't imagine it's too much different. It's like every intersection, though. Almost literally, you'll see a Tesla.
As much as any other model.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it outsold the Ford F-150. It's beating the most popular car sold. EVs are certainly gaining in popularity. And as a result, other markets are wanting to get in on that. There's a company called BYD, which is a Chinese company. And we currently don't allow the sale of Chinese vehicles in the U.S. I'm sure that there's a list of reasons for that. But one of them is that they are making a vehicle called the Seagull, and it is selling for $10,000, brand new. I know you just bought a used car, and I'm sure it would have been sweet to have only paid $10,000
for a brand new one.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For a brand
for a used one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially an electric. But you gotta wonder.
Yeah. So this is if you're watching on Rad TV, I've got a picture here on this website of the BYD Seagull. I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of like
they look almost like they're Yaris. Just a step up, like a Yaris. Yeah. Yeah, they look like, you know, those smart cubes that were basically just like two seats.
The smart cars.
They look like they're maybe just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, the tires look like bike tires.
Yeah, they do.
They have like 12-inch rims.
They look like you've got a whole $10,000 of car there.
Yeah. Well, what concerns me about that too is I think that the safety features in my car cost $10,000 to produce, you know. So this is a $10,000 vehicle, and what a couple of different Chinese auto manufacturers are attempting to do is create production facilities in Mexico, and by producing in Mexico it allows them to sell in the United States. Right. Currently there's nothing prohibiting against it. I mean, in fact, production for like most Chevy pickup trucks is still done in Mexico, so it's not like we can say, well, no more cars from Mexico. So this company, BYD, could potentially be pushing very, very heavily into the U.S. markets soon. I don't have a review on these vehicles for you, but I suppose if they make their way into the U.S., I will be happy to talk about the news on them. And I can't imagine it's going to be great for a $10,000 car.
This has "you get what you paid for" written all over it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Like. even the glass that the windshield and windows are made of, I have a feeling is like that, you know, you apply thumb pressure too hard to it and it cracks.
The stuff they use in Hollywood that they just use sugar glass to shatter.
It rains and your glass melts. So as a result of this push Chinese vehicles potentially making their way into the U.S., Congress is proposing a 100% tax increase on Chinese vehicles.
Oh, now it's a $20,000 vehicle.
Now it's 20 grand. Now it's right up there with everything else. Obviously with the potential of manufacturing in Mexico, plus the low price, there is a good chance these cars might actually make it to U.S. markets. So anyway, that's my EV news for the week. When we come back, we're going to talk about the AT&T data breach a little bit more, and a little bit more fun, data breachy, fun stuff to be aware of. So, look out for all that fun information. Steely Dan picked today.
Oh, that wasn't the AI?
No, yeah. Well, you know, we should really keep up on the AI music, though, for our commercial returns. That was a good pick. I like some Steely Dan. I don't really have any tie-in for the dirty work, I guess.
Not this time.
Not this time.
Unless you want to count just a good jam. Like anything, but I do.
Yeah. So I talked about this at length in our first segment last week. So if you didn't hear it, you can go back and listen to that. It's on podcast, Apple Podcasts. It's on the Rad member site. You go back and listen to that show. And the very short of it, though, is that AT&T had a massive data breach. Over 70 million customers' data has been leaked. And AT&T, up until this morning, had not notified me as a customer of AT&T services that there was a data breach. I didn't even know about it. And let me bring up my notes real quick on this. So AT&T this morning, the only reason I'm even doing a follow-up on this is because I got an email from them. Did you read through that email?
A little bit, yeah.
So what I can tell you first is that AT&T leaked basically everything that they had on millions of users, and everything that AT&T has is a lot of data.
Anything you'd need to sign up with a service provider.
Birthday, social security number,
home address,
username, password, phone number. I mean, like everything that you would never want out there.
Yeah.
Was okay. So I got an email finally from AT&T today that says, "Hello, we're contacting you regarding the security of your data. Thanks. After a thorough assessment, AT&T has determined that some of your personal information was compromised. To the best of our knowledge, the compromised data does not include personal financial information or call history." And notably, their email doesn't say what it did include.
That's probably for the best for them.
Here's what I would like it to say. To the best of our knowledge, the compromised data included your social security number, your first and last name, your phone number, your billing address, any information that we stored on you regarding your credit validation and credit criteria. But it may not have included personal financial information or call history.
Don't worry. They only got the last four of your credit card number.
Yeah, man. So this is a wild...
It's really unfortunate that a call history, which is whatever, yeah. Who cares, but you can change your credit card number. You can go and get a new bank account if you have to. You can't get a new social.
No, I can't change my birthday.
I mean, you could go buy a house, I guess, if you needed to change your address.
So last week, I mentioned that this is the first time that I've actually signed up for one of the services where you can lock your credit so that if anybody tries to apply for credit in my name, that the application process effectively gets halted digitally because of a lock. I signed up for Experian credit monitoring. I don't remember what the name is.
Did you have to pay to do that?
No, I pay for it. I think it's either $20 or $25 a month. I'm pretty sure it's $20 a month. And what I get for that $20 a month is not a whole lot. Mostly what I get out of it is I get to lock my credit. So there's other features, like they monitor my credit.
There's probably some fraud insurance up to certain dollar amount.
I actually don't think it includes that. There are other Experian services, which I'm going to go into in a second, which do include that. But the main thing I'm getting out of this is every 30 days, I get an updated actual credit score from all three bureaus. So it's not an estimated score. I get an actual credit score from all three bureaus. Which is kind of cool. I'm actually logging into my account right now, and I wanted to see if there was anything in there about.
Hey, it's so fun that coverage. Every time one of these massive breaches happen, we get the privilege of paying for that.
I know, right? Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm getting into here is that the email from AT&T goes on to say, what is AT&T doing to help? AT&T takes these issues very seriously. We are offering you 1 year of complimentary credit monitoring, identity theft detection, and resolution services.
So what's going to happen is all that information is going to get compacted into a nice little zip file that says, open me on April 15th, 2025. Yeah. Half of these suckers won't have credit monitoring anymore.
Right. Yeah. I know. That's the funny thing is that, like, okay, you get 1 year of credit monitoring, but it's not like my social security number is going to get changed in this next year. It's
so nice that they can permanently leak information that can get you in some hot water financially, personally, really just ruin your life. Mm-hmm. And they only have to pay for it for a year because, hey, they take your security real serious.
Yeah, as they just said in this email. Yeah. So now I know they take my security serious. Yeah, so I'm looking at, I logged into my Experian app, and the thing that I paid for last week is primarily just providing me the function of seeing additional credit information. It does provide some level of removing my personal information from the internet. So like if you search my name and, you know, my city, it's not really hard to find most people's address that way. Mine is especially easy to find just because of things I'm involved in. Businesses that require your name to be on like corporate documents to have your address. So I'm not really going to be able to hide that stuff very well no matter what I do. I mean, I could do like PO boxes and stuff, but I don't quite care that much. So anyway, they'll strip my like phone number and things off of websites. I get less spam calls. That's included. But the main thing I care about there is a credit lock. It prevents people from being able to apply for credit in my name. Notably, that is not included in the service that AT&T is providing from Experian. So the thing that the AT&T is providing is called Experian Identity Works. And they gave me an activation code, which I used just before we started recording this morning, and I signed up for Identity Works. And the main thing Identity Works offers is looking for breaches that contained your information and notifying you of them. And then also it does supply you with a $1 million insurance plan for if there is...
Which is only covering you for a year.
Which is only covering me for a year from AT&T. So like, let's say, for example, somebody signs up for a car loan in my name, for whatever reason, my Experian lock doesn't stop it, and they successfully get a car loan in my name, they don't pay for it, the car gets shipped to Mexico, And now I owe, I don't know, $80,000 or something like that. So creditors start coming after me. Yeah, right, whatever it is. And I would take no less.
They could have got one for 10.
Yeah, and it was Chinese BYD. They could have gotten 10 cars for 100 grand deal. Probably even get them for like half price if you buy a bunch of them at once. So I have an insurance policy now, basically, by using Experian's Identity Works for the next year, supplied by AT&T. So if you did not get this email this morning, I would give it through the week. If you're an AT&T customer, and I would recommend signing up for this. It is legitimately a free service. It does provide credit monitoring. I also found out while going through my history of credit leaks that apparently T-Mobile leaked my data back in 2022, including my social security number.
And look, if you feel like you're missing out because you didn't ever use AT&T, Experian leaked all our data like 4 years ago.
I know, so it's, right? It's yeah. all... I'm using Experian to protect me, the company who leaked all of our data years ago. It's all out there,
but hey, they gave us 2 years of protection.
Right. This is where
Experian
I feel like...
Experian cares twice as much.
This is where I feel like the main value of these credit monitoring services that you can pay for is locking your credit. Because for anybody who doesn't really get that, the basic concept is that if you apply for a loan anywhere and they want to validate that you have good credit, they're going to check your credit score. Well, they can't even get your credit information because it would come back and tell them, This is locked. Frozen. You're not allowed to see any of this. And let's say I was sitting inside of a car dealership applying for a loan. I'm looking for a new BYD Chinese $10,000 car.
As one does.
Right? And then they're going to come up. The salesman's going to come back up and say, well, Mr. Reeder, we ran your credit, and we didn't get any information. You have a lock on your account. I'm going to say, oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. So I open the app on my phone. I hit unlock. And then he's going to go rerun it, and it will work. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to get his information. He comes back over to me, and I hit lock again. And then that little 10-minute window, unless somebody else happened to in that 10 minutes try to apply for credit in my name, will have protected me from any other potential threats. So I can't say that I will tell the audience I recommend Experian's credit locking service. I can just tell you that it's what I know exists, and from what I've read about it, it seems to be effective. It seems to be a thing that will actually stop criminals from applying for credit in your name. Now, I've not had this happen to me yet, thankfully, fortunately, but if it were to happen, I'm very curious to see how the process looks for somebody applying for credit. If it like notifies me, hey, someone in, you know, Missouri.
I hope it gives you a button that just says, get them.
Get them. Give me a red button. Get them button.
They just come back. They're like, sorry, sir, we've got to beat you up.
So, yeah. Hey, man, bad news. Somebody pressed the get him button.
Yeah.
We're going to go get Mario from the back, and he's going to bring his baseball bat with him. So in other fun news about data breaches, we talked about Roku not that long ago.
Not even like 2 months ago, yeah.
Not even a couple months ago. Roku's in the news again for having had 576,000 accounts.
God, that's like 10 times breached. The last one, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it only
yeah,
like 50,000?
Yeah, I was
like
70
time?
Somewhere in that number. Yeah. So a lot of accounts breached. I'm going to get to Roku in a second. Before I get to Roku and a follow up on our last discussion about why that matters as a company who sells a lot of TVs, there's another company who sells a lot of TVs, LG. I own an LG TV.
Me
you
too.
Own an LG TV. I actually last night was, we were going to bed and we were watching The Gentleman on Netflix. I checked into it. Follow me on Circles. You can see what I'm doing.
Right on.
You can follow Ryan too. You can see him check into the grocery store.
That's, yeah, 2 months ago.
So I checked into The Gentleman. I'm watching The Gentleman and I was like, man, the contrast on my TV in the bedroom is really lackluster. There's times where it's just way too dark. It's not like auto. Thinking about buying a new TV. Maybe I'll get one. You know, maybe it's tax time. I get a return. Maybe I'll buy a new TV. And I was thinking about getting another LG when I remembered this is a topic for today. And I
can't get a VLC. Can't get an LG. There's
no
just
man.
Everything.
So basically, LG had 90,000 TVs vulnerable to a remote attack. And without going way too far into the technical weeds of what happened, it basically allows one of their TVs, which is connected to the internet, to be remotely accessed. The contents of that TV can then be viewed by the person remotely accessing it. But the most scary part is... The scariest part. Most scary? Scariest part.
Scariest.
Scariest. We're gonna go scary. I'm going to go scariest part is... they can write software remotely to the TV, which means that...
So, like, install apps?
Sure.
Basically.
Infect it, right? Or the worst part is that right now it's completely vulnerable to update attacks, which means they can replace the version of the Netflix app built into your LG TV with their own version. So when you launch Netflix on your LG TV and it's like, oh, you need to sign in again. Oh, guess who's going to get your username or password?
Oh.
Yeah. So
you're going to enter it and it's going to tell you incorrect username.
Or even better, it's going to say, congratulations, you've signed in. You just need to update your credit card information because we don't have that anymore. Yeah. Or your card expired. Let me go ahead and get that updated information from you. Thankfully, the number of TVs that have been sold in the U.S. are not as many. It's in the thousands, but it's not 90,000. Point being, this goes back to something that you and I have talked about this before with Roku's TV breach. I'm not really a huge fan of TVs that connect to the internet.
I don't want any of my appliances connected to the internet.
I don't want mine to either, but I do because there's conveniences.
But yes, no, I explicitly don't connect my LG, not because of this breach, but because it's like a 9-year-old flat screen TV, yeah. And I know that it doesn't get updates anymore, so it doesn't deserve the internet.
Yeah, so for
it
the people that are like, well, wait, you bought a TV that connects to the internet so you could watch your Netflix. So Ryan, how do you watch Netflix?
Google Home.
Google Home. You plug in your...
My Google TV right into the HDMI, right. And then that connects to the internet.
Okay, so I use an Apple TV. I've used an Amazon Fire Stick, both kind of the same concept. It's just a little... I know Fire Sticks are not my jam. I'm a real big fan of the Apple TV for a couple of reasons, not because of the price. They're super expensive compared to like a Google Chromecast. Mm. Those are like $40 for HD, you know, versions, but... the Apple TV I like because, it, you know, as an iPhone user, it has a good, you know, integration, yeah. Right? It's cool, some cool features there. Quality is good. Audio quality is good. As a not necessarily an audiophile, but like I'm into good quality video and audio. It puts out good stuff, but so does Chromecast.
Gold-plated HDMI cables.
Oh, yeah, you know all the good stuff. So... the LG TV that I have, it is connected to the internet. It shouldn't be. I confirmed, by the way, it's not one of the models that is...
Well, you could always close the port that's, you know, vulnerable.
There are things you can do. What I will tell everybody is that if you have an LG TV and the model number of that TV starts with CVE, so Charlie Victor Echo, CVE, there's a good chance it falls under the list of models that are currently flawed and will require an update. To my knowledge, this article was posted late last week, but this was not, as far as I know, LG has not released the update for it yet. So anyway, if you wanted to check the model number, it's usually on the back of your TV, but you can also go into like the settings and go to the about section. It'll show you your model number typically there as well.
This is another just like random thing that this reminds me of when it comes to data breaches and accountability and the requirement to disclose problems. Most of the times that we read these articles where other companies or security companies are finding these breaches and disclosing them about LG or Roku or whatever, they've told those companies a month in advance, right. Usually, and they usually only put this information out themselves because the main company that's had this critical flaw or vulnerability or breach happen hasn't disclosed it yet.
Like the AT&T data breach. And they knew weeks before they
really
announced it.
Gets under my skin.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah, it kills me. It's corporate PR. They're trying to figure out how to do damage control. Quick correction. I'm gonna red pen myself a little bit here. I checked. There is an update actually. So LG did release the update. And if you go to on your LG TV settings and then support is where the software update is under. There's a software update button. You can just hit check for update, and they have released it, so you can update it. It will patch this vulnerability.
It's a trick to get me to connect my not secure TV to the internet.
Well, if it's not connect, that's actually a good point. If you're not connecting your TV to the internet already, you don't need
this
to do
doesn't
anything.
Even matter.
It doesn't matter to you. Yeah. So I was saying that I connect my LG TV to the internet, and my LG washer and dryer and refrigerator are also connected to the internet.
Enjoy being a part of the botnet.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So actually, when I rebuilt my entire home network with what is for lack of a better phrase, like low grade commercial networking equipment. Yeah. I did it almost exclusively because I was so frustrated with the frequency at which my dryer would drop off of Wi-Fi. And I can already hear all the people. Ian, you don't need your dryer on Wi-Fi. I get it. I hear you. But when I'm sitting on my couch watching Saving Private Ryan at full 5.1 surround sound at maximum volume, and my watch is notifying me that it's too loud of an environment to be in.
I'm surprised you don't watch it in your Tesla.
I do.
That is where I live.
That is where I watch it. Go in my garage and watch movies.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm watching Saving Private Ryan, and, you know, Tom Hanks is shooting at the tank in his last act of desperation, and I get a notification on the top right corner of my screen with all this madness that says, your dryer.
That sounds pretty immersion breaking and not fun at all. Oh man, I'm really enjoying this movie. You know what would make it better? Oh, chores.
Well, then I look over to my wife and I tell her to go get the laundry. And then she looks back at me and says, you know, that's not how this works. Yeah. But I do like it for that because it like, you know, if you run your clothes in the dryer and you take them out before they get wrinkled, then your clothes aren't wrinkled. So I actually really like it because most of the time that's my notification, especially if I'm watching TV. It'll tell me on my phone too. My fridge has this, it's called Kraft Ice Maker in the freezer. And it's such a bad fridge. I'm not recommending LG refrigerators. The Kraft Ice thing is kind of cool, but it breaks constantly. Nice. So I have to like take it out and then reboot my refrigerator to get it working. But the thing I like is that LG's app tells me when it breaks.
That's great.
So it's dope that it's connected to the web because it tells me when it doesn't work. I just thought of how stupid that is.
Find out by trying to use it.
yeah. So anyway, yeah. If your appliances are connected to the internet, in my case, part of what I did was I isolated those devices to their own Wi-Fi network. I've talked about this before plenty of times. Having what I call an IoT network, your Internet of Things network. So this is where you connect your cameras and your appliances and your robot vacuums and your light switches and all of your other smart stuff that you bought on Amazon, and you're testing it out, and it probably works most of the time. The reason that you want these things on an isolated, you know, usually a guest network is the easiest way to define that, is because so often these devices become vulnerable. So in this case, LG TVs, which are currently vulnerable over the network, can be effectively infected. And then with software that's installed on the TV, they can monitor the activity on your network, collect passwords potentially in certain circumstances. So I keep those devices on an isolated network because they're really known not to be very secure. This kind of stuff comes up constantly. In fact, I was just going to tell you, or I was just saying that I was going to talk about Roku. Roku has 576,000 accounts that were breached. This was another password stuffing attack. I'll come back to what that is in case you haven't heard me talk about it before. In many cases, purchases were made using stored credit card information on Roku accounts. Roku identified which accounts were hacked. They also identified which accounts had malicious purchases made underneath them. To the best of their ability, they have refunded those purchases or tried to credit people back. In some cases, it's out of their control. They have notified their users. So props to them. It didn't take them incredibly long, but they did notify people. And then the password stuffing thing. So we've talked about this before. I hope that the majority of listeners of the show at this point really understand password stuffing. But the basic concept is you use the same password everywhere you sign in. There is a data breach at some website that you go to, and then your username and password AT&T. Is leaked. AT&T is a great example. Yeah. So AT&T they just leaked that. My username and password. Now, my password for AT&T was like percent, capital A, lowercase d, you know, exclamation point, symbol, number, and it's like 40 characters.
And
long,
you only
whatever.
Used it there.
I only used it there. So the fact that they got that password meant nothing. I just went in, changed that AT&T password, and I didn't have to worry about them taking my Gmail account, my personal account, and that password combination and trying them at my bank, trying them on PayPal, trying them on Roku, trying them on 23andMe, all of these other places that have frequently been victims of password stuffing accounts. So an organization, an individual, I don't know exactly what, got 576,000 combinations of usernames and passwords that successfully logged in to Roku accounts. The crazy thing to me is that they've pulled off 500,000 successful logins using a password stuffing attack. It makes me wonder how many email address combination or password combinations did they have to try to get 500,000 successful ones?
Well, they just had that mother of all breaches.
Millions and millions of accounts. Was that in the billions? Actually, I can't remember.
I think they said it was something like 6 billion.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, like yeah, it was in the billions with a B. And so yeah, most people who are using the same username and password in more than one place, even if it's just two places, yep, it's so easy for these people to take your username and password and just guess it in thousands of places to try to sign in. So that goes back to something I talk about a lot, the importance of using two-factor. All of these Roku accounts would have been protected if they just had a basic form of two-factor. When somebody is password stuffing, what is probably, they probably started with millions of accounts in order to get 500,000 successful logins. So when somebody's going through millions of accounts to try to guess a username and password combination for Roku, they don't care to try to hijack your two-factor to try to figure out what text message.
That's a bunch of extra work.
No, they just go to the next one. There's millions of available combinations. They just go to the easy options. So when you hear people say something, and hopefully there isn't like a tech in your life who's telling you this, oh, you know, two-factor's kind of useless anyway because they can just get around that by doing this and this and this. It's kind of true, but it's those technicians who, A, shouldn't be in this field, and B, they spread really bad information about the actual likelihood of somebody getting into your accounts. If somebody's directly attacking you, yes, that could potentially be true, but right, even that is incredibly challenging to overcome any basic form of two-factor. Again, two-factor being getting a text message after you've typed in your username and password with like a six-digit code.
Multi-factor code.
I really like when you can use it if it's an option. Microsoft makes an authenticator. Most of our employees now have been like messaging me and some of our other team like, hey, it's like forcing this app now, the Microsoft Authenticator app for my two-factor. And that's because as an organization, we are slow rolling that as a mandatory form of two-factor. Right. We've already had two-factor authentication, but we've allowed users to use kind of the versions that they want. But now Microsoft is even pushing on their own, like you must use our app. I'm happy about that because as annoying as it is to have another app on your phone, Microsoft's two-factor is the best. It is incredibly good. It's one of the only ones that really hasn't been breached. Even Google's two-factor authentication, they have it's called an authenticator app where you can put a bunch of authenticators inside of it.
I used to use that one a long time ago and stopped because of how much of a pain it was every time I got a new phone.
It's gotten way better.
Okay.
Yeah.
You used to not be able to transfer your logins easily. So, you'd have to turn off two-factor and turn it back on.
I'm totally with you. It was bad, but I gladly highly recommend Google's Authenticator if you're not going to use the Microsoft one, which is a bit more complex. Google's two-factor authenticator is way, way better now. Not only can you sync your two-factor accounts with your Google account now.
Oh, good.
So if you lose your phone, you can get those back. You also can export them all with a single QR code and just take a picture of that to move it to a new phone.
That's what I do on Authy.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. So just so that to catch anybody up who's not on the same page as us, Google Authenticator is an app you can download, which is free, and it provides you a six-digit rotating PIN code every 30 seconds for the things you log into. So like for me, just I'm looking at my list, like OpenAI, I have a ChatGPT account. I have two-factor on ChatGPT, so I type in my username, I type in my password, and it says, hey, what's your code? So I open up the Google Authenticator app on my phone. I see the code that's going to be there for 30 seconds. I type it in. And if I type in the wrong number, it doesn't let me in. If I type in the one that's up on my screen right now, it will let me in. If that code, let's say I type it in on my screen and then a minute goes by and I try to submit it, it won't take it because right, it doesn't take old codes. It only takes the one that's there right that very, very second, that within that 30-second time frame. It's a great form of two-factor. And I think anybody who's listening that's like, God, that's annoying, man. That's a lot of steps. So every time you sign into anything, you got to open an app on your phone.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and I don't have sympathy for saying
and
sorry.
I will never feel bad about
it. Yeah, I wish that it was, I wish we didn't have to do this, don't get me wrong, but I don't have sympathy for the person who's like, I'm not going to do that, and then calls us knowing that they should have done this, and they're like, oh yeah, I got my account hacked. So yes, it does take an extra 20 seconds every time. It adds up. It's a lot of wasted time, but that compared to what can happen if you actually have an account breached is obviously, it's far better to just deal with doing the two-factor authentication whenever you can. So coming back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Chrome. We're kind of talking about autofilling passwords, and we've got some Chrome news I'm going to talk about. And as always, just as a reminder, too, if you have any questions about the things that we're talking about, email us, rad@radradio.com. Those emails are sent right over to me. Happy to talk about them on the show. I reply a lot of times just after hours when people have simple questions. So feel free to email anytime any questions that you have, and we will be right back. Jam. That was another song that we didn't have any reason for playing other than Ryan picked it and I liked it.
Yeah.
It was a good one.
Just keeping your eye out.
So I'm going to pull up on Rad TV for anybody who's watching. I told you we're going to talk about Chrome. I have some fun Chrome news. I'm going to show you chromeenterprise.google.com.
Timer.
Oh, thank you. And I, you know what, Ryan, go ahead and, you were the one who notified me of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nothing to get, you know, our panties in a bundle about.
Yes, it
right.
is.
Chrome's got an enterprise browser. In fact, I don't even think that that's new, but they've got new enterprise features that they're adding to it for, you know, if you use the Google Workspace.
Yeah, Chromium is a name a lot of people might have heard.
Yeah.
It's not a browser that you should be really using. There's no need to use Chromium specifically. And for most people listening to this,
yeah.
Chrome is just fine.
Yeah.
Standard Chrome.
But so Chrome Enterprise, which will be $6 per user per month,
yeah,
is being built with some extra features.
Chrome Enterprise, by the way, is just
Chrome,
your web browser
that's managed by your enterprise.
Yes.
So single user signed in, controlling security features, basically. The thing that I really don't like, one of several things I don't like about this is. I think it sets a bad precedent. I think a lot of browsers are going to be watching to see how they can start making money and what kind of paywall they can put certain features behind. You know, Chrome's specific enterprise level features that they're locking behind are deep malware scanning and mm-hmm. advanced data protection. It's like, hey, I want that while I'm browsing on Google. Can I have some deep malware scanning and some advanced data protection just here as a regular Chrome user? No.
Nope.
No, you can pay for that, which that's what I'm concerned about. What are browser companies going to start looking at and weighing? Well, you know, users who really want this, maybe they're willing to pay an amount per year or a subscription for their browsers. Kind of like how all of the costs for all of the different ChatGPTs and LLMs started to explode once $20 got put onto ChatGPT, what, 3 or 4?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, hey, I've got an AI. Yeah, $20 a month sounds great.
Yeah, good deal. Yeah, and ChatGPT.
$6 a month per user for your browser? I'll take that.
So, what are the benefits? Primarily, it is corporate level, you know, rule creations and things that, like, let's say, for example, I only wanted our staff to be able to search on certain types of websites or limit their usage.
Or if you
times.
Wanted a global password policy for anything that they could set as a password.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things that as a business owner you could pay for this. As an individual, the malware thing is fine. There's plugins you can get on Chrome that improve its ability to analyze what's happening on a website to protect you. Even plenty of free ones.
But what's naturally going to happen from this is features that people really like are going to slowly get deprecated and then brought back as paid features.
Yeah, this is the thing that as soon as Ryan brought up to me that this was announced, I was like, no, please, God, do not charge for Chrome.
We have come full circle to the AOL browser.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so Chrome, Google makes their money as an information company. So this is a company who, you know, sells.
They're your information.
Yeah,
company.
Sells your information. Like, you are the product. When you're using their service, Google Maps or whatever it is, you're the product. You're the one who is making the value of their software. And you know, people, tech to you included, pay Google a lot of money for advertising. Yeah. So, you know, when somebody's looking up computer repair, we're hoping that we show up and we pay for advertising for that. Thankfully, we can do things that make us show up organically, which is a whole other story, on the internet. So you can search like computer repair Sacramento, and we already show up without having to pay for ads necessarily. But that is just one of their many places where they gather information on users. I mean, even using an Android device, a very simple thing that's like, oh, this is good, is that they track your location at all times, especially when you're on the road, and they'll determine if your phone it slows down. You know, if you're going 60 miles an hour on the freeway and it slows down to 30,
everybody else who has maps is going to see that slowdown.
Right. Yeah. So that's why you have such accurate predictive, like, it's going to take this long to get from this location to this location. And right now there's traffic. It's so good at that because of the amount of data collection that they do. So on the surface, that data collection is like, oh, okay, you're using this for like super useful information, and it's probably randomized and private. And I think a lot of that you could safely say is the case. Like, traffic data is not necessarily something that Google cares to store about as an individual, but they do. Mm-hmm. They know exactly where you were at a time, and your phone, in fact, even will show you your location history because Google is providing that as a service.
You have to go in and delete it manually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. And same thing with Apple. Apple does it too. Google's not, you know, alone in that. But Chrome is the reason Chrome, the web browser, is popular is it was good. For a time it was arguably the best. Now that I couldn't necessarily say that. I'd even say that the integrated browser in Windows is about as good, Edge, in many ways.
It's Chrome-based.
It is based on Chrome. It's just stripped of a lot of the Chrome junk. It runs a little bit more efficiently in some cases. It's not bad. It's not a bad browser to utilize as an alternative. Firefox is still good. If you're using a Mac, Safari is just fine. But Chrome is popular because it was a good browser that does a good job and is free. Yep. And by setting this precedence that, like, well, premium features of our browser, things that we would have included for free had we decided not to start charging for it, are now going to cost $6 per person per month. And it's not included in Google One, a service you could already pay for that includes a bunch of Google features. So I agree that with Ryan that the precedence that this sets is not ideal for us as people already paying monthly for so much stuff.
And other companies are going to be watching. It's not just that. God, now that Google is just the first one that was brave enough to say, we're going to charge you for this thing in this browser.
Yeah. Now, to be clear, you can still use Chrome's free browser.
Yeah.
But it's going to allow the excuse for Google to say, "Oh, that doesn't work.
Oh, that feature is really nice. You're right. It's over here.
Yeah, we have it in the paid one in our enterprise.
Go get yourself the big boy browser.
Oh yeah. Oh, it loads slow. Oh, you don't like that it loads a website slow.
We have better resource management in our paid browser.
Yeah, right. So now, I mean, I'm kind of curious to see what becomes of this.
These are all real slippery slope arguments.
Well, yeah, and it could very well be that this turns out like Google's VPN service.
It'll be dead in 2 years.
Yeah. Google is notorious for starting projects and then killing them off without notice, too.
Especially if people like them.
Yeah, seemingly. So you signed up for Google One. You're paying for it monthly, yep. And it included a VPN service. For those that don't know, a VPN service is effectively a piece of software that you install on your phone or your computer that privatizes your internet browsing.
And so you have it everywhere, always on.
Yep.
And whether I'm on Wi-Fi, data, it's always on.
So, like, let's say you're shopping for quilting supplies for grandma or whatever. Google doesn't know you're doing that. Well, I mean, Google might, because you're using their browser and their VPN, right? But if you're using, like, I use private internet access, PIA, as a VPN. And I don't keep mine on all the time on my phone, but when I turn it on, the idea is that if I'm using Safari as my web browser and I have PIA enabled, my VPN enabled, that both AT&T, who provides service to my phone, and whoever I'm on Wi-Fi with at that time cannot see what I'm searching for. Right. So this is a cool feature. It was integrated with Google, and then like everything else people like about Google, they just kill it. Yep. And their reason was literally not enough people were using it, which I struggle to believe because I know that there are a lot of people that were using it inherently. Like, it was just a feature that would get turned on, and you could just use it, and it was working great.
Now, I will say I've never downloaded it onto a desktop.
Sure, but on your phone.
Now it comes native on all the Pixel phones,
right?
And it's built in whether you have Google One on the Pixel phone.
So there's a lot of people that with a Pixel that recently got a new Pixel phone that were using this, whether or not they knew it too. In some cases.
So they'll still keep their VPN. That's the thing.
Oh, if you have a Pixel,
if you have a Pixel 6 or newer, you will keep the VPN.
I don't even remember seeing that in this. So the other thing that they killed off recently was podcasts. They had their own version of a podcast. So like, and I get that, you know, it's not like when people talk about podcasts, I think people know Apple, Spotify. Yep. Like those are kind of the two places that you get podcasts right now. So it kind of makes sense that they would kill that off. But it's just, it's an example of many of their different products that they've killed off over the years. And one of the things that I'm really curious to see how this plays out is either do they kill off Chrome Enterprise because it's unsuccessful in the next couple of years, or do they kill Chrome because Enterprise becomes so successful that if you want to use their browser, it's only a paid option?
I guess that's really dependent on whether or not they dive into, you know, trying to be the, oh, we're killing ads for user privacy. Well, because you've got this new source of monetization. I would, too, if I could get $6 per user per month.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting. I mean, I pay for a lot of Google services. I pay for YouTube TV. I pay for YouTube
Premium. Not for long, you don't, bud.
Why is that?
Because it's going to die in a year.
Oh, God, I hope not. I really like YouTube TV. I won't even be surprised because I could see them saying, like, not enough people use it. We weren't making money on it, so we killed it. But anyway, you'd think with, like, the $100 or whatever I spend with Google already every month, oh, my God, it's more than that because of all the Nest Aware services that we pay for, too, that maybe I could get access to this cool feature. But no, we'd have to pay for it. So hopefully this doesn't set the precedence for other browsers starting to charge for you just to get on the internet. I really hope that doesn't become a thing. If there's anybody I think that would be a big holdout on that, it would be Apple with Safari. I can't imagine that would be something they would do soon. They're not necessarily notorious for charging for things that used to be free.
No.
So I would think that's going to give them a leg up if Google pushes this too hard. Speaking of Apple, one last thing I wanted to touch on. At some point, I would like to do a show that is heavily about gaming, and I can bring in Kevin, who we talk about a lot, and he can finally have something to contribute.
He's not going to like that.
Oh, no, he said he would do a show about gaming. But I have a little bit of gaming news for those of you who either consider yourself gamers or just like old school gaming or whatever. Apple finally pulled the restriction from the App Store that prohibited game emulators from working on iPhones, iPads, etc. And for anybody who doesn't know, a game emulator is traditionally used for loading games in your phone or on your computer that are sort of classic games, the original Mario, right? Games like this, going back to the original Tetris. A lot of these games are now beyond a stage where it's not legal to distribute them without the publisher's consent because they've been around for so long that at this point it's appropriate for them to digitally be free copies. So you can get a copy of, you know, the original Super Mario Brothers, for example, on an emulator. And Apple, having just released this restriction within this last week, means that there will start being emulators that hit iPhones soon. And the only thing I really wanted to make news out of this was, A, if you're a gamer, that's going to be kind of fun because hopefully some good emulators will emerge. B, be very careful about what you download with emulators because Apple is reducing restrictions on a few things. One of them is allowing emulators in. The other is that in the near future, they will allow super apps, which is their like another app store to exist in your phone. So you don't have to go to the app store. You can go to a super app store and get apps from there, which is sketchy and is not something that you should do. And we will talk about when the time comes.
Well, then one of the broader conversations about emulators is going out and finding ROMs.
Right.
And that traditionally being where people usually get into trouble.
So if you get an emulator sometime in this next week, if you're like, cool, I found this one, it's good on my phone, and you need to go get ROMs, which is a ROM is Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, Tetris, those are the ROMs.
Game dump.
Those are the games. If you're not sure of where to get those or you found a source that you think is legitimate, please feel free to email and ask. RAD@radradio.com. You can ask, send me a link. I will verify if it is legitimate for you or if it's safe. And I look forward to those questions because I could use some good ideas of where to get some ROMs if, you know, if my my preferred location doesn't already have them. Anyway, that's all we got for you this week. I got, I'm sure another follow-up probably to this AT&T thing next week. I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be more news. And I'm looking forward to that. And we will see you next Tuesday.
Peace out.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
I'll be back.
Goodbye, old friend. May the force be with you.
Goodbye.